Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
we take a trip back to 1980 when everything seemed to be changing. Do you remember that, Jim?
Oh, yeah. 1980. I was 13. I can tell you something about changing. All right, Patrick. This is really exciting. Mm-hmm. This is really exciting. First off, I think we're going to do this week, like it might end up being a full patron week or at least a mostly patron week. We'll see how it goes with the various recordings. But I do know that we're going to kick it off here with someone we haven't spoken with in quite some time.
It's been too long.
And I know it's been too long and I'm really excited about this.
Yep.
And the show is called Rockin' the Suburbs and I'm Jim Linehan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And patrons are the people who help keep the show going. They're listeners who contribute to the show, and every so often they get to come on the show and pick a topic. We talk about whatever they want, and with us for the first time in many months is Eric Lorenz. Eric, how are you?
Good. How are you guys?
Doing well, man. It's good to hear your voice. It's been too long. Eric has been a member of our community and supporter of our show for a long time, so it's great to talk to him, and I want to say in tribute to that, and because it's been a while since I heard his voice, I just want to do this and crack a Sierra Nevada Pale Ale, one of the classic American beers. And Eric, how have you guys been holding up through this you know, extremely challenging time for our for our world and country?
Well, I'm doing a lot better now. My COVID experience has been quite different from everybody else's. I work for the Illinois Emergency Management Agency.
Wow.
And we've been on the front line since February, and when everybody else was, working from home, we were in our offices working 70, 80 hours a week, so that's why I couldn't talk to you guys for the first 6 months of the year. So,
no wonder we haven't heard from you.
Yeah.
Just now climbing out of that, and things are getting back to normal a little bit.
Yeah, well, thank you for that work. I mean, it's been something that nobody really had any previous experience with. So how did you guys handle it?
Well, this one broke all the rules from things like floods or tornadoes. So we were kind of like everybody else, just dealing with it as we went along, making it up as we came, and, you know, building the airplane while we were flying it. So,
yep.
It was, you know, a lot of camaraderie. If you're, you know, you see the same people, they're working those 10, 12 hour days, and it really built some collegiality. It was, at the time I was wondering if I'd ever get through it, but, you know, looking back, it was a pretty good experience.
Wow. That's good to hear.
Yeah. Very good, man. Hang in there.
Yep.
We'll get through it. All right. But here's the good thing. We get to talk about music now. So now,
right, yeah.
6 months later and, you have some time and you can sit down and talk with us, and that's good. So we appreciate that. So what did you want to talk about in this episode, Eric?
Well, for this episode, I actually thought of this idea back in January. I had done an episode before with you guys that looked at a couple of album anniversaries.
Yep.
And with this being a year that has nice round numbers, I thought, well, hell, let's look at what happened 40 years ago, 30 years ago. So I started looking at 1980, and what really got me interested in that was the Pretenders album that came out early in the year.
Yeah.
So I thought I'd look at what else came out that year. And I was looking at the list, and what jumped out at me was there were so many great debut albums. Just four that I want to talk about today, but others that, you know, we just have to mention and maybe say a couple sentences about. But when I saw that list, I thought, a la Seinfeld, well, there's a show. So that was my idea.
So these are debut albums that came out specifically in the year 1980.
Yeah, 40 years ago.
All right.
And that's why we had to get together with you guys now, because otherwise we'd be slipping into 2021.
Right, that's right. Yeah, because we're already in Rocktober. And I got to say, this is a cool, cool idea, Eric. And it because I was doing a little bit of research on this, we don't work too hard in Rockin' Suburbs, but... man, did I find something really cool.
And all right.
If you don't talk about it, I certainly will.
So, all right. Well, let's let Eric go first.
Yep, absolutely.
All right.
All right. Well, like I said, I'm going to talk about four albums in particular and then kind of do a grab bag of some of the other debuts. And okay, as I mentioned, the first one I wanted to talk about was the Pretenders' first album, which was released in January 1980. And I was a senior in high school. And I think I talked to you guys earlier about how the Police's first album kind of sent me off exploring new directions. Well, the Pretenders' first album did that even a little more. Just so much, I don't even know how you categorize it. It's got punk, it's got new wave,
yep.
It's got rock and roll. And I was just, in doing my research, I noticed that at least three songs from that album have already been talked about on Rock in the Suburbs. Tattooed Love Boys was episode 876, BJ Bonin on Time Signatures. Kid, episode 457, Short Guitar Leads with Mike Wagner. Episode 890, Closing Tracks with Tim Hoffman, Mystery Achievement. So, and even after you cherry pick those songs, you've got so many great songs. You've got Precious, The Phone Call, Up the Neck, The Wait, Stop Your Sobbing, Brass in Pocket, number 14 on the Billboard Pop Singles. So just an amazing album.
It really is. And I got to tell you something. In 1980, so you were saying that you were a
senior in high
school. Senior in high school. Okay. So I would have been 13. So whatever that, I guess I was in junior high at that time. And so I was, I'm bringing this up because I was too young to appreciate an album like this. I was into dumber things than this at the time. I didn't really get into the Pretenders probably until Learning to Crawl, which was their third album, I want to say. But anyway, you go back and, it's one of those things where as a music fan, you go back and when you're a little bit older and you listen to it and you think like, my God, this must have been the biggest album ever. I mean, it has so much like life to this record. You know what I mean? There's so much energy. It's just crazy. And like you said, and it's also just like great song after great song after exactly. great song. It's really, really a great piece of work.
Yeah, I was glad I got the chance to listen. I had a reason to listen to it from start to finish. And man, like you said, the hits just keep on coming.
And I also like what you said there too, that it is kind of hard to categorize, don't you think, Patrick?
Yeah, totally.
And
I'll tell you guys, for those of you watching on the video, I have the Mobile Fidelity Half-Speed Master version of this. Why I do, I'm not sure, but somewhere along the line, I bought it. And I think, man, for all the record players and stereos I've had in my life, the only thing I could ever notice about a Half-Speed Master is that I paid more money for it. I don't think it ever would sound better on my turntable. But it's probably worth something, I would imagine, more than the regular debut. Yeah.
That's cool. Now, hold that back. I want to see the whole album cover because I'm sure people are familiar with it, but I want to just point out that don't they all just look so cool?
Oh yeah, without a doubt. Yeah. Massively cool. It's amazing. Yeah, totally. And on the back, she's just kind of like what, Tyner Shoe or zipping up a boot or somebody else's boot? I don't know what
it is. Pete Barnum's boot, I think.
Yeah, fixing his pants. Like how cool is your singer? That's what I'm gonna be doing on the back cover of the album. It's amazing.
Eric, do you remember when you first bought this album?
This one I got probably in February. One of the ways I learned about music back in the day was go to the local record store / head shop, and they had a local free newspaper called the Prairie Sun out of Peoria.
Nice.
And I would read those reviews trying to get a leg up on, all my cohorts in high school. And this one was a review that leapt out at me. And like I said, I was kind of at the point where I was open to exploring different things. And I read about it, and I think I ran out and bought it the next day. So, yeah, and I loved it. I loved it then. At the time, I thought maybe Tattoo Love Boys with the Time Signature threw me for a loop. But after I listened to that a few times, I got used to it, and I was loving that as well.
The cover of Stop Your Sobbing is immaculate, maybe my favorite Kinks cover of all time. And I noticed it's weird on the back. I was just reading it. That's produced by Nick Lowe, but the rest of the record is produced by Chris Thomas, maybe?
Was it Roy Thomas Baker or Chris Thomas?
Chris Thomas,
Chris Thomas, okay. Yep.
Yeah, except for Stop Your Sobbing, produced by Nick Lowe. I'm not sure what the story behind that is. But anyway, not a Pretenders episode, I know, but wow, it's such a great cover. And of course, she later went on to be involved with Ray Davies pretty seriously. And that's kind of amazing. It always amazed me too that she covered that. Yeah.
Also, I always like Pretenders 2 because Chrissy Hynde is from Ohio.
Yep.
But then moved to UK where she got, you know, joined a band with the with a bunch of Brits. That
right.
was really cool too. And this was recorded, was cool. of course, in London. And then the other thing too, if you can remember the days of music videos, probably my absolute favorite, just little teeny thing in a music video of all time, just a little touch, right? Of all time is in the Brass and Pocket video, which you might recall. She was portraying a waitress.
Uh-huh.
The other band members come into like this diner and they sit down and whatever. And at one point, I can't remember which other member of the band it is, but they're doing the background vocals. And when she says, "I'm special," and they go, "Special," one of them points at the menu. It says "Special."
Right. That's great.
And that was like my favorite music video moment.
That's a beautiful touch. And I got to say, if you guys remember the movie Lost in Translation, when Bill Murray is, not Bill Murray. It's the female lead in this movie.
ScarJo. ScarJo.
That's right. Scarlett Johansson. Yes. She sings it. And that's when they're at the karaoke party. That's kind of cool too. Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. Awesome. Great record.
Oh, yeah. I will play it right now, and I'll talk to you guys later.
We'll see you in 40 minutes.
Yeah.
All right, so the next two actually go together, in my mind anyway, and these were two albums that were the first I was aware of that were categorized as neo-psychedelic. The first one is Echo and the Bunnymen Crocodiles, which was released in July of 1980. And then the second one is The Teardrop Explodes, Kilimanjaro, which was released in October of 1980. I'll mention really quickly, a third album in the neo-psychedelic genre that was released in 1980, a debut album, was Jeopardy by the Sound, but I'm not going to talk about that. In any event, they were characterized as neo-psychedelic, but to me, I think Echo and the Bunnymen is more of a classic post-punk album. The Teardrop Explodes maybe a little bit more psychedelic because of Julian Cope's influences, and they had the horns there. Interesting overlap between the two. You guys are probably aware of it. Julian Cope and Ian McCullough were in a band together in Manchester before they broke off and formed their separate bands. And the debut album has different takes on the similar song. It's called Books on Teardrop Explodes, and Read It in Books on Echo and the Bunnymen. Crocodiles was a summer release, but to me the cover photo and the overall sound just reminds me of the fall, just kind of crisp and dark. Yep. And, you can really, I think, in the production, you can hear the space between the instruments in that, and it's just such a crisp, clean, typical, or quintessential post-punk album for me.
Yeah, that's really great. Now Patrick's looking for something. Trying to find
Let me just see. Let me see how many of these I hit. I don't think I have Crocodiles.
Crocodiles I got maybe 6 months after it was released, and The Teardrop Explodes probably around the same time.
Do you still have them?
I've got my vinyl. My vinyl is in storage, unfortunately, but I have them on CD, and I have them burned to my computer. So,
and where is that storage located?
In a secret location.
So in 1980, I mean, obviously you mentioned you were in high school. So
By this time I was in college, a freshman.
Okay, this time you were in college. All right. So what were you?
There's one.
I find this really interesting because you're a Midwesterner like myself, and how did you? I mean, I guess you mentioned that Alt Weekly. Like, how did you get into this kind of music where you lived?
Well, you know, being in a college town, you had a little bit more exposure. But
yeah,
in those days, it was just reading about stuff. And I think the Daily Illini newspaper, they had a review of one or both of those albums. I specifically remember reading the Teardrop Explodes review. And I think by that time, I'd already had the Echo and the Bunnymen album. So I thought, Neo Psychedelia, that's for me.
Yeah, right.
And I think later, it became more just post-punk, and I don't know that much about the neo psychedelia genre, but to me, it's just quintessential post-punk.
Absolutely agree, and I'll say I do not have Crocodiles. I was correct, but I do have Kilimanjaro, which is an amazing record. I'll tell you, Julian Cope, both bands are from Liverpool, and I'll agree with you, Eric. They they have that dark, rainy kind of Liverpool gray sound, like both these records. And certainly, I think Julian Cope was more into psychedelia, but great call. I think that's exactly right. And he, has definitely gone on to be a noted expert on German music from the early 70s, what we call krautrock, I guess, in rock slang. He has written a book, and I actually have this book right here, too. If anyone wants to learn about krautrock, you should really read this book called Krautrock Sampler by Julian Cope. It's a fantastic overview of it. It just breaks down the entire genre for you. And I actually have a highlighter in my copy. It looks like a textbook. That's kind of what it is. It really gives you everything you need to know. I saw Julian Cope play once, and it was I can never think of anyone else that had this. He had this really tall microphone, right? It's probably 3 or 4 feet over his head microphone stand, and it had steps on it. So he could walk up the microphone, right? It had alternating steps, and he would be way up in the air, like singing, but he'd still be on the microphone, and it could go up and down. It was really cool.
Huh.
And it was on that tour when he had World Shut Your Mouth, but
yeah.
He, Julian Cope, guiding force. And I think, legendarily, him and Ian McCullough had a rivalry,
right.
And certainly Echo and the Bunnymen ended up being much more successful commercially and, probably record sales wise. But Teardrop Explodes, really cool shout.
If you want to call out a few songs on the album, Echo and the Bunnymen, Crocodiles, I'd recommend Going Up, Do It Clean, Stars Are Stars, Rescue, Villiers Terrace, but really they're all just great songs.
Yep.
Teardrop Explodes, Treason, Suffocate, Reward,
yeah.
Poppies in the Field. Again, just fantastic stuff.
What a song it is.
Yes,
it's,
it is.
Really fantastic. Really good. And I think, I don't know, I should go back and look, but I think it might have been one of those records where Sire put a couple singles, non UK album singles on that record. But if anyone knows that, let me know. Because they wouldn't put, I think they still weren't putting singles on albums in the UK at that time.
I think Suffocate was a non-album single that was on the American version, but not on
tacked
the UK.
On. Yep. Well, I'm glad they tacked it on. Whoever put that version together made me really happy. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not sure why I don't have it on vinyl. I will rectify that situation right now on Discogs.
I'm glad to add to your shopping list. one thing about Crocodiles, I broke one of the cardinal rules of making a mixtape back in the day. I put Stars Are Stars and Villiers Terrace back to back on a neo psychedelic mixtape, but it worked. In the context, it worked.
Hey, totally, man. Hey, sometimes you gotta rewrite the rules.
Exactly. So the last one of the big four, how could we not talk about this? U2 Boy, released in October of 1980. Not living in the UK, these guys came out of nowhere for me. And this one I got in the, I would say, spring of 81. And I heard I Will Follow on the radio. And I think I bought the album the next time I had, next chance I had to get to a record store. And I was in a fraternity at the time. And I played it for my fraternity brothers at a party. And after that, it was on the playlist for the rest of the semester. Wow. The song, along with Stories for Boys, A Day Without Me, The Electric Co. I think one of my favorite songs is Out of Control. I love the surf influenced guitar solo at about 155 in. Just fantastic.
I totally agree with you on Out of Control. That's a great song.
Oh, and so good.
Now, did Bono have the mullet then? Was that...
Semi-mullet,
that develop
I think.
A little bit later.
Pre-mullet.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Is this pre-mullet era?
That's right.
My copy of that album had the it didn't have the boy on the cover. It had the kind of black and white images of the four band members.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And it was a little bit distorted, so you couldn't really tell what they looked like.
It wasn't the best designed album covers, I recall. It looked kind of weird. Yeah.
Yep.
But yes, I had that too. Or I had a CD a little bit later on that I got. But their sound, kind of similar to what you were saying about the Pretenders, like a little bit hard to categorize at the time, I think.
That's
you
true.
Know, were they a new wave band? Were they a punk band? Were they just, you know, sort of a guitar rock band? But they also just seemed really cool too.
Yeah. This is the only U2 album in my collection.
Really?
So, really?
On vinyl. Yep. That's it.
I mean,
I don't know. I probably got mad at him.
And he held up Unforgettable Fire, by the way,
that's,
for the listeners.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
So
a little bit of the, you could see some of the propensity towards excess in some of their later albums, but I think they kept it under control on this one. And this was another one like the Pretenders album that I really enjoyed, you know, taking the time to listen to it front to back for the first time in probably a decade. And, you know, great.
Yeah,
I think you can. It's funny. It almost serves as kind of an artifact. You can hear them sounding young. You know what I mean? Steve Lillywhite produced this. So, but they sound a little bit more raw, a little bit more, it's a little less polished. You know, probably not as many overdubs or any of that kind of stuff. A little more live kind of sounding record. It really sounds like a band that just, you know, maybe just played in a pub that afternoon and then went to the recording studio after they got done with their set or something, you know?
So those are the big four that I wanted to talk about. Just quickly ticking off some of the other albums. I'll throw it out there. And if you guys have a reaction, please go ahead. February of 1980, Young Marble Giants, Colossal Youth.
Yep, that's a great call.
Yeah, their one and only release, although I guess it's been released several times in different versions. Pretty big at the time, not so big now. February of 1980, The Romantics' first album.
Mm-hmm.
March 1980, The Psychedelic Furs.
Mm, that's a great record.
April 1980, The Feelies' Crazy Rhythms.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Also April 1980, X Los Angeles.
Yeah, yeah.
September 1980, continuing in the punk vein, The Dead Kennedys' Fresh Fruit for Rotting Vegetables. October 1980, The English Beat, I Just Can't Stop It.
Mm-hmm.
And in the fall of 1980, I don't know exactly when, Jim Carroll, Catholic Boy.
Oh, wow.
That's right. Jim Carroll's Catholic Boy. Mm-hmm. Great record, too. I may have that. I'll look for it in a second. But really good shouts. I mean, you know, obviously a super formative year, I think, in the maturation, if I can use that 50 Cent word, of post-punk. You know, there's a lot of post-punk stuff that happened in 78, 79. I'm, you know, thinking of the development of bands like Wire and some other things that took the energy of punk and the melodicism of earlier music and put it all together. Yet, you can hear in this year where things have gone even farther, where, you know, the sound has been fleshed out. It's gone in different directions, and it's really a good year. Such an interesting topic, Eric. We could talk about it for many, many years. I mean, Feely's Crazy Rhythms. Come on. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is a stone cold classic of all time. That is an awesome record. Opens up
a little
with
quirkier than some of their yep. later stuff.
Yep. Much more frantic and speedy, you know, and they had Anton Fear on the drums. It opens up appropriately, I think, with a song called The Boy with the Perpetual Nervousness. That's
yes.
a great song,
yes.
right? Yeah. You know, that boy across the street doesn't do anything. And it's like, that boy is me. So good. But I want to say, I'll say this really quick. I got to say this. So this is such an interesting thing. And part of it is just a DC thing. So I don't know, Jim or Eric, if you've ever, guys have ever heard of this band called Half Japanese.
Yeah.
It was led by a guy called Jad Fair.
Jad Fair,
and
yes.
Originally, it was Jad Fair. And they lived in the suburbs of Maryland, him and his brother David, and they started, you know, messing around in their house like in the mid 70s or, you know, 76 or something like that. And they were legendary for not, you know, Jad Fair, especially, you know, and David would play drums and whatever was laying around, you know, like a cheap keyboard or any, you know, they just were totally homemade. And I saw him play many times around DC because they would always, you know, show up, and Jad, you know, was just like always Jad with some other guys. And, you know, I saw him once with his brother, and just, you know, they'd be on the craziest bills. It'd be like Naked Ray Gun with Half Japanese, you know, and some other like punk band, and be like, why are they on this bill? And they would always just be completely against, you know, whatever was happening. They just were always their own unique sound, and he never tuned his, or spent little time tuning his guitar, actually. And you know, he still was making records for a long, long, long time, quirky, cool albums. But to say all that, their debut album, it's called Half Gentlemen, Not Beasts, was released in 1980. And as far as I can tell, and as far as like the internet and some fairly, you know, people that know a thing or two, it's the first triple debut album and maybe the only triple debut album in music history.
Wow.
They only made 1,000. They paid for it themselves. Yet, it has gone on to become a classic. You know, they cover 10th Avenue Freeze-Out on this record. They cover,
right.
There's tons of covers, right? Yep. Tangled Up in Blue, Ain't Too Proud to Beg. It's just them, you know, playing the songs they knew. And, you know, there's, it's, you know, it's Minutemen, like there's 38 songs or, you know, something, and all these medleys and just, you know, short nonsense songs. I mean, talk about predating Guided by Voices. You know, this record really does that, you know, by about 5 years or something like that. And I would imagine, you know, Robert Pollard was aware of them. But anyway, just want to throw that out there. They're, you know, they were from around here. They always played in D.C. And, you know, they've become somewhat of an underground legend. But...
That's so rad. That's so rad. the books that are right together. So what's gonna be wrong? Nothing like my homemade dress, Papa. Big book wasn't big enough. I was standing by the side of the road. I had rain falling on my shoes. And now for the East Coast, God knows I'm taking through. It's true. Tangles up and through. He was married when we first met. Then he defeated for us. Ow! After I'm a jam, I guess, but I used a little too much fun. Throw that car as far as he could and abandon it out west. Split up on the docks that night, both agreeing it was best. I looked at her over my shoulder, she was walking away. She looked at me over her shoulder, she says to me that we'd meet again someday. Only I knew that we're both paying up and through.
I'm glad you had something to add to the list.
That's really
yes,
cool.
I mean, it's a tough listen. You know, it really is like about, you know, just some guys that have you guys ever played before or something like that, you know? And you know, I just think it's interesting. It's certainly an anomaly. And the only other one, I noted a couple others down really quick. Killing Joke, album, talk about post-punk. And also In Excess put out their first record in 1980. So that kind of shows you how things were developing.
Well, I think you hit on something really cool here, Patrick, which is that pretty much all these records, I guess all of them we've talked about, even though it's 1980,
yeah,
it's the, you know, the first year of a new decade, and their debut albums, they all kind of sound like the decade to come. Uh-huh. You know what I mean?
You're right.
None of them sound like they're trying to, it's their first album, but they don't sound like they're trying to do something from the 70s so much. I mean, obviously the punk and new wave influence started in the 70s, but you get what I'm saying in terms of US, rock, you know, pop music.
Absolutely.
These all sound like the future. And so,
and in doing my research, I saw that, you know, some of these bands were formed by people who had bands in the past, but really none of these bands had been in existence for that long before their first album came out. So they were
right. You know, well said.
They had shaken off whatever influences they had from their earlier bands, and they were doing something new.
Well, it's funny you mentioned this too, because you didn't talk about like debut albums. Like solo debuts. That was also, I noticed a couple of those in the 1980s of people who were in bands, well-established bands, but then released their first solo album in 1980. One of those would be Ozzy Osbourne.
Oh, okay. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Was that Blizzard of Oz?
Blizzard of Oz, 1980.
That's very good. Yep.
Another one would be Joan Jett.
Oh, wow.
What? Yeah. No way. Bad reputation. I didn't know that.
There you go.
Wow. Well, there you go. Another. Vote for this being an incredible.
I'm just looking at this list here. There's a couple more I want to mention real quick. Curtis Blow, his album came out in 1980.
And, wow.
And not only that's probably, I mean, Sugar Hill Gang was also like the same time, but Curtis Blow is probably the first real rap album.
Album. Yeah. Yes. Exactly.
Yes.
I mean, Sugar Hill Gang was a one hit, you know, group, right? They only had the it was incredibly influential, but really was that 12 inch or that single.
Your hands, everybody, if you got what it takes. Cause I'm Curtis Blow, and I want you to know that these are the breaks. Breaks on a bus, breaks on a car, breaks to make you a superstar. Breaks to win and breaks to lose. But these here breaks will rock your shoes, and these are the breaks. Break it up, break it up, break it up. Another man,
that's the
brakes, and she runs off with him to Japan.
That's the brakes.
And the IRS says they want a tag.
That's the brakes.
And she can't explain why you can't your tag. And Ma Bell sends you a whopping bill.
That's the brakes.
With 18 phone calls to Brazil.
That's the brakes.
And you borrowed money from the mob.
That's the brakes.
And yesterday you
Wow, Curtis Blow. I didn't know that. Was that the breaks or was it just called Curtis Blow?
I think it's just called Curtis Blow.
Yeah. Maybe
it contain, is. Yeah. But it has the breaks on it.
Right. Okay.
Nice.
Which is awesome. And then what else did I see here? You mentioned X. I mean, that's great. Shout there. You mentioned English Beat. The other one I noticed here. Oh, Loverboy. You got your Loverboy album that came out that year.
Thank you.
You got the Bryan Adams debut album that year. And then don't sleep on this one. You got the debut album from Huey Lewis and the News. They did. They kind of made a name for themselves in the 80s, a little bit later on. But their debut, I don't know if you've ever seen this, the self-titled debut.
No.
The really goofy looking album cover. But there is a really good song on there. The first... there's some others that are pretty good, but the opener is called Some of My Lies Are True. I never told you that I was someone said it got fun. You know, you do. So what's so much on the telephone? I'm never home. It's just like I told you. Because it's real the way you used to make me feel. It makes it so hard to say. But right. And it talk about kind of like Skinny Tie type new wave.
Oh yeah,
it's what it is. It totally is. It's it's a really fun song.
Cool.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's cool. So cool. And kudos to Eric because you know, fabulous topic, fabulous idea. I mean, go look at this, folks. Even you know, on the Wikipedia page, or just look some of these things up, and you'll see some really, really thought provoking.
Interesting
stuff.
Year and interesting all these debuts. Yeah,
yeah, yep.
That's something.
Very, very cool. And I think you're right, man. Just sort of a preview of what was going to happen.
All right, cool. Thanks very much, Eric. Thanks for bringing this to our attention. This will be
you're
a
welcome.
Lot of fun.
Good stuff, man.
But you're going to stick around and until tomorrow, right? Or we'll call you back tomorrow, I guess is the way it's going to work. You're probably not going to keep the phone line open.
That, yeah. Unfortunately, I can't sleep under anybody's pool table, but that'll be fine.
Yeah.
If you could just keep the phone line open in case we need to talk in the middle of the night.
Keep the Zoom.
If I get scared,
keep the Zoom going all night long, right? All right. So we'll be back with Eric Lorenz again tomorrow, and he has another topic he wants to discuss. That is really cool.
Great.
And if anybody out there wants to comment on debut albums of 1980, please do. If there's something
that
really means to you, something to you,
we missed it.
Yeah. Let us know. So call. Call, leave a message,
612-440-1984.
There you go. Or hit us up on the email, rock@suburbspod.com, or find us on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram @suburbspod. All right.
All right.
All right. Get some rest, guys.
Yeah, definitely need to get sleep.
We'll come back and talk with Eric Lorenz again tomorrow. It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenahan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And with us has been
Eric Lorenz.
All right.
All right.
All right. Woo! See you tomorrow, man. Chance is the clue. He was 12 years old. Fell from the roof on East 29. Kathy was 11 when she pulled the plug. 26 reds and a bottle of wine. Bobby got leukemia. 14 years old. He looked like 55 when he died. He was a friend of mine. People died, died. People died, died. People died, died. People died, died. They're all my friends. They just died. Church, let the gimmicks go rot. So they died of hepatitis in Upper Manhattan. Sly in Vietnam, bullet in the head by the old Dino Drino on the night that he was wet. They were two more friends of mine, two more friends that died. Have you heard of the album Sports? That's when I really think the band reached their critical and promoted.